Welcome all of you on this spring night. I'm going to talk a little about the Buddhaverse tonight. This is a word that was coined by Robert Thurman. The Buddhaverse. I think just saying it, just thinking about it, conjures up a few adjectives about what the Buddhaverse might be. Does anybody want to throw out a few adjectives, what they think a Buddhaverse might be?
The universe.
The universe. What do you think the Buddha part of it of that is?
I guess it would be like a guiding principle. Or...
Yeah, uh-huh. Stan?
That we are all Buddhas, and that is the nature of the universe, loving and helping each other.
Yeah. Anybody else have some adjectives that popped into their mind? Mary?
I was going to say poetry, but that's not an adjective, so I have to say poetic.
Yeah. I think you're right.
No mind.
I'm sorry.
Spacious.
Yeah.
Vast.
Yeah. And that's exactly how Robert Thurman used the word. He translated the word for Buddha field, you know, where all of those adjectives are manifest as the Buddhaverse. And we're here in a Buddha field. Shakyamuni Buddha is manifesting those adjectives, those qualities in this world. And, in other sutras, Shakyamuni Buddha said that, there were an infinite number of these Buddhaverses before and after. Actually, he would have never said before and after. He would have said there's an infinite number of Buddhaverses right now, right this moment. And I've been looking at the Vimalakirti Sutra with Robert Thurman's translation of it, and me and a friend are studying it together, and it's kind of a nice way to study, have a little dialogue and read and Vimalakirti was one of Buddha's disciples who was very learned and erudite, especially around the Buddha quality of emptiness. So this sutra is in most of the sutra, Vimalakirti has a chance to to teach about emptiness, one of the Buddha qualities. Buddha sort of takes a back seat and offers the teaching seat to Vimalakirti. But in the first chapter of this relatively short teaching, the Buddha kind of sets the stage, and the Buddha sits down like he does in most of the sutras, and in most of the sutras there's a procession of the people who've come to hear the sutra. They come and circumambulate the Buddha to thank him for coming and giving the talk. And one of the groups that comes to hear the sutra are these young monks from a monastery. 500 young monks, and it's a hot day, and they're all carrying parasols to shade themselves, and so they're carrying their parasols and circumambulating the Buddha 7 times, and they then sit down and put their parasols next to them, and the Buddha takes up all the parasols and kind of opens them up, and kind of in a miracle, there's this great canopy that's shading the entire 84,000 strong group of people all over their heads. And it's this image the word just left me. You go and you sit in a comfy chair and lean back, and this scientist shows you the stars. What's the planetarium? He makes this planetarium, and you see all of the billions, it says in the Vimalakirti Sutra, billions of Buddha fields out there. You know, some of them are pretty small, but you see a little Buddha, and you see little people around them, maybe little parasols. So you see all these Buddha fields that are happening simultaneously right along with this Buddha field that we're in right now. So Buddha wants everyone to know that that it's not just right here, you know, on they called it the Saha world or Jambuvipa, the earth, but all these Buddha fields were happening all over. And these 500 young monks from the monastery were chanting, just like we chant. Expressing their gratitude to the Buddha. So the lotus of the Buddha preserves the realization of voidness. You nullify all signs in all things everywhere. You are not subject to any wish for anything at all. The miraculous power of the Buddha is inconceivable. I bow to you. You are like infinite space. That's the chant that, the end of the chant that the 500 young monks, maybe they hadn't heard too many Dharma talks yet, because they were just young monks. But they were already pretty impressed. I mean, the planetarium and everything. They already knew that this experience of voidness or emptiness, this experience of not exhibiting any signs or seeing any signs, the experience of not wishing for anything, just accepting things just the way they are, not wishing for anything different. They already knew that those were pretty remarkable signs, maybe the indication, you know, that this was Buddha, or this was a great teacher, understanding emptiness, signlessness, and wishlessness. Maybe those were other adjectives to describe the Buddha and to describe the practice of this Buddha field. Twice in this first chapter, he wants everybody to know, all the 84,000 monks and nuns and lay people and gods and flying beasts. He wants them all to know that they're going to get a lot out of this lecture, even if they're just brand new monks who are worried about getting too hot. So they brought their sunscreen and their parasols. He wanted to know that everyone was going to understand. And he said it like this. This is going to be just like the gods in Triya Shrimsha heaven, another Buddha field that is up there in the planetarium. All of the monks there take their food from a single vessel, yet the nectar which nourishes each one differs according to the differences of the merits of each. So that living beings, all born here in the same Buddha field, see the splendor and virtues of this Buddha field of the Buddhas according to their own degrees of purity. So it makes me, and he says it in another way earlier in this first chapter, the Lord Buddha speaks with one voice. Those present perceive that same voice differently, and each understands in his own language according to his own needs. This is the special quality of the Buddha. So I remember my first few times here at Santa Cruz Zen Center, and I hadn't meditated before, but I just had this idea that I wanted a different perspective on the world. I had some problems that I needed a different perspective on, and maybe a spiritual practice could help me with that perspective. And I've told this story before. There are a lot of reasons that I said, maybe I'll come here to the Zen Center and check out meditation. And I really appreciated the stillness of my body and mind once I settled in. Once I, you know, I just had one class in the Introduction to Zen before I came to the Zen Center, so I just sort of curled up in this posture the way I thought I was told, and It took me a while to settle in, but I really appreciated how still my body and mind became. And I had this intuitive sense that this was the right direction for this perspective. That's the word that I used in my mind, that I needed. I needed this perspective. I had this sense that, yeah, first I just have to feel settled. I think this is the practice for me. And Catherine gave the talk that first time, and she talked about birthlessness and deathlessness. First she talked about birth and death, and then birthlessness or no birth, and deathlessness or no death. And, you know, I really didn't understand that. Maybe it was the sitting. But I appreciated her sincerity. And so I had already gotten what I needed just in that first night. You know, I felt settled. I felt that I was on the right track to a different perspective, and I felt like the teaching here was pretty sincere. And I loved the cookies afterwards, and I loved the chatter afterwards, and I got to know people here. So I got what I needed that first night. The next week I came, I've told this before, was Taigen Dan Leighton, a Dharma relative, a Dharma brother of Catherine's, who'd just written a book on the Chinese monk from the 1100s, Hong Zhu. And in his book, in Taigen's book, explaining Hong Zhu's teaching, it was about terms like emptiness and about silent illumination. Hong Zhu's description of this meditation that we do just tonight, silent illumination, included, as Taigen was trying to tell me and the rest of the people, it was about shamatha and vipassana, certain states of mind in this meditation. And I didn't understand that very much either. But Taigen is a really nice guy, and that came across in his talk. And once again, I really appreciated the being settled in my body and mind, and I really liked chatting with everybody outside afterwards. So once again, I got what I needed, even though other people that had been here for years before me, they probably did appreciate the careful explanation of emptiness and shamatha. And it went right over my head. But other people, I think, really appreciated Taigen's scholarship and the way he was able to explain things. So everybody, just like it says in the Vimalakirti Sutra, there was just one voice, but everybody got what they needed in the Buddha Dharma, in this practice of taking refuge in Buddha, of just meeting Catherine and Taigen, hearing the Dharma, hearing and learning what you can from each Dharma talk. and taking refuge too in the Sangha, just getting to know the other people that have brought this practice to fruition in their life and are expressing the joy of this practice over sugary snacks in the back patio. So it really was a place that even in those first few weeks, I left my parasol at home. We don't need them so much in Santa Cruz, so I left it at home. But I really related to those young monks who just from seeing how the Buddha was sitting and seeing the procession of 84,000 beings do the ceremony of greeting, were convinced that, yeah, this is what I need right now. This practice is what I need. And so maybe I saw a little bit of this Buddha field, of this Buddhaverse, right there, even those first few nights. A few years before that, Santa Cruz, had its 89 earthquake, and I won't tell you why I actually wasn't in Santa Cruz for the earthquake, but I was here. I was back at home the next day, and despite the fact that everything in our house was kind of rubble, and everybody's house in the neighborhood was filled with rubble, everyone was so helpful and open-hearted and kind, and people in our neighborhood with pickup trucks were helping haul away the rubble, and we could see a whole line of pickup trucks going up to the dump 4 miles north, and it was a big traffic jam. But everybody was really patient because everybody was just helping each other out. Everybody was very willing to wait their turn to dump their rubble because they know the whole town was filled with rubble. And that was a picture of the Buddhaverse, practicing compassion, practicing patience, practicing loving kindness. Sunday morning, a group of us from here joined the Pride March downtown, and that was a real Buddhaverse, with confetti and streamers, floating over Pacific Avenue, and everybody kind of chanting together and laughing together and waving at each other. That was another picture of the Buddhaverse that looked, just like that planetarium filled with jeweled lands in the sky. It felt just like that down there on Pacific Avenue. So one thing the Buddha wanted all the 84,000 monks and spiritual beings to know was this Buddhaverse is right here, and you're in it, and you're never not in it, and so that's how he wanted to step. That's the stage that he set before he introduced Vimalakirti to talk about emptiness. So once the procession was over and everybody sat down, they invited Buddha to start speaking. And one of the senior monks said, "Please, Buddha, explain to all of us the purification of this Buddhaverse, of this Buddha field. How do you make a Buddhaverse? How do you make a Buddha field? And the Buddha says, first of all, the Buddhaverse, a Buddha field, is a field made up of living beings. And the Buddha field springs from the intention, from the practice of all of the living beings in the Buddhaverse. And so both of those examples of the practice of all of us cleaning up from the earthquake in 89, and the practice of us celebrating our differences and our sameness at the Pride Parade, those were some of those glimpses of the jeweled Buddhaverse were made up of all of the practices that we were doing with each other, our intimacy, our closeness, our compassion. And then the Buddha goes on to list a pretty familiar list to all of us who've been here for a few lectures or for a few years. All of the bodhisattva practices, for instance, the perfections, the paramitas, generosity towards each other, the practice of patience, the practice of really getting out there and keeping our intimacy and compassion alive, that energy required to do that, to shovel the rubble, or give the other people in the line of pickup trucks the high five, that kind of energy that we show to each other that shows us our unity. So the Buddha goes through all of those bodhisattva practices and says that this is how you remember that you're always in the Buddhaverse, that you're always in this Buddha field, just like the ones you see up there that, maybe you're only seeing the jewels, the light reflecting from all the jewels that you're seeing up there, but actually that's just the way it is right here. All the time, and this is how you remember. You practice that generosity, and you practice the loving kindness, and you practice the energy to remember moment after moment how diverse and how similar we always are. So the Buddha goes through quite a list of how we remember what qualities we put on to remember moment after moment that we're in this universe. And people are pretty excited because most of the people there have been doing most of these 18 practices. The practice of the four immeasurables, one of which is just being so happy for somebody else's great good fortune. So most of this 84,000 have been practicing most of these practices. So they were glad to hear, that I can remember when I'm practicing all of these practices, when I'm practicing maybe just one of these practices, how how, yeah, things seem pretty bright. One of the monks was a close disciple. Was a close disciple of the Buddha. They were pretty good friends. Maybe it was Shariputra. Maybe Shariputra knew the Buddha so well that he wasn't so impressed by, you know, the fact that 84,000 people were circumambulating. Yeah. Yeah, so what? He still puts his pants on one leg at a time. You know, so Shariputra knew the Buddha pretty well. And even after hearing all the practices that help us remember that we're in the Buddhaverse at all times, Shariputra raises his hands and says, "As for me, O Buddha," maybe with a little bit of sarcasm he says that. "That might be true what you say, but as for me, O Buddha, I see the great earth, its highs and lows, its thorns, its precipices, its peaks, its abysses. And it looks to me like it's entirely filled with excrement." He used, I don't know why, you know, this sutra was originally in Sanskrit and translated into Chinese and Tibetan, and Robert Thurman used the Tibetan translation to make it an English translation, and Robert Thurman chose to use the word "this earth and all of its cliffs and rivers and abysses is filled with order," which maybe he was too polite to say excrement, but I know all of you pretty well, and excrement is a pretty safe word, and I'd never heard of ordure before, but Robert Thurman's a pretty learned man, So the Buddha said to the brave Shariputra, he said, "If a blind person can't see the sun, the moon, and the stars, do you blame the sun, moon, and stars?" And Shariputra, "Oh no." Shariputra said, "You blame the blindness." So Buddha was just reminding Shariputra that just because you forget sometimes, that we're helping each other out here, that we're celebrating together, that we are different and yet we're pretty much the same, that we enjoy after the procession of 84,000 people, which must have taken most of the day. We also appreciate having snacks together. Just because you forget that sometimes doesn't mean that you're not in this Buddhaverse of compassion and unity and harmony and loving kindness at all times. So this was Buddha setting the stage, making sure that that everybody was really present in the Buddhaverse before Vimalakirti took the stage and was going to teach this difficult teaching on emptiness, on how to relate to the true nature of all things, of all phenomena, the true nature of Buddhas, the true nature of everyone there. He wanted to make sure that everyone, really was remembering that they were in the Buddhaverse along with all the others. And just to make sure that Shariputra, really remembered, Buddha says, Shariputra, take a look at this. And Buddha probably wasn't sitting on the ground. With 84,000 people, the Buddha had to sort of sit a little bit on an elevated stage and an elevated seat. So he wanted Shariputra to really, really understand and really remember the Buddhaverse. So he pulled his robes up and he stuck his foot out. I've got all this, so I won't do the whole enactment. But he stuck his foot out and he touched his toe to the earth. So he was sitting on a chair, an elevated chair. The Buddha touched his toe to the earth, and all of a sudden, the grounds were covered in jewels, and flowers were coming from the sky, and everybody that was sitting curled up. Maybe it was already getting a little uncomfortable sitting cross-legged. Everybody was immediately in gem-strewn high seats, really comfortable, so that their legs could stretch out a little bit. And the other people, who were already pretty convinced that they were in the Buddha field, the other people pointed at Shariputra and said, "Do you see it, Shariputra? Do you see it now?" And Shariputra was pretty happy. I believe. What did Shariputra say? "I see it, Buddha. Here before me, a display of splendor such as I have never seen or heard before." So Shariputra got the message that when you're touched by the Buddha, when you are seated in the posture with the body and mind of Buddha, when you're washing the dishes in your home with the body and mind of Buddha, when you're celebrating with all of Santa Cruz on Pacific Avenue with the body and mind of Buddha, you're in this Buddha field. When I'm sitting quietly, even that first night that I was here sitting quietly for the first time, the experience is certainly of stillness, of tranquility, definitely nothing flashy. But there's, as I've said before, I feel a little bit nurtured by this practice, these bodhisattva, these 18 bodhisattva practices. I feel nurtured by this mind and body of Buddha, of being the mind and body of Buddha. And of course, the Buddha does remind us that this Buddhist teaching, you know, is our food, and we all eat just what we need at any particular time. So this is this practice nurtures us, and I think you know, the jewel thrones and the rain of Mandarava flowers are a little over the top, but it's a way of saying yes, I'll come back to that again and again. Just as, you know, I'll come back on Wednesday night after sitting calmly, because, you know, I was nurtured in this practice with all of you. I'll come back again. And I think that's what the Buddha, and then later on Vimalakirti, were trying to show with all the jewels, with all the flower petals, with that great display, is that this practice nurtures us. And when we are fully present in the Buddha field, helping our neighbors, helping ourselves, we're nurtured and sustained, and we thrive. Just to end, this idea of when we're touched by the Buddha, when we can remember this practice, when the Buddha just puts his little toe out. We remember the Buddha field. There is a baker that when his heart is open and he's joyful about the unity and intimacy of all beings, his wedding cakes are like ambrosia, and they're masterpieces of pastry, of the pastry arts. And what's that movie from Mexico, Like Water and Chocolate, Like Water for Chocolate? You know, when you're putting your whole heart into the food, everyone in the entire Buddhaverse feels that compassion, that unity, that intimacy. And sometimes, you know, he forgets. And you can't even choke down those cakes when he forgets the Buddha field that he's in all the time. They stick in your throat. And all he needs to remember is the slightest little touch, and as Dogen says, the entire sky turns into enlightenment. So maybe we've had that experience of remembering the Buddha field, and even forgetting the Buddha field. We've got just a couple of minutes. Right now, during our talk and our sitting, there's a group of bodhisattvas at the Santa Cruz courthouse on the steps that are really trying to help pastry chefs in the entire Buddhaverse remember the Buddha body, remember the Buddha mind, remember the open-heartedness of our lives. And so we're practicing remembering the Buddha field along with the Bodhisattvas just down the hill tonight as well. Michael.
Why do you think sometimes it takes a major disaster for this Bodhisattva and this openness and helping to happen?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in the Vimalakirti Sutra, right after the Buddha is asked, so how do you make one of these Buddha fields? And the Buddha wants to remind people about how inconceivable it all is, even though we are in this Buddha field at all times. And he says, you know, have you ever tried to decorate complete emptiness? Have you ever been in vast space and tried to put an adornment in the middle of vast space? It takes something inconceivable to abide fully in this practice. And I think the earthquake of 99 and the of 89 and the volcanoes in Guatemala and the big island of Hawaii shake us from our very foundations and get us out of the old our habit ways and back into the ways that we know we always are, you know, being together. You know, we even though I've never met, for instance, the guy at the water department, I turn on my water and I flush the toilet every day, and I forget how connected and intimate I am with the entire water department. And then if the earth shakes and that water is spewing, you know, out of the ground, I remember, oh yeah, I really need the entire water department. I really love the water department. So I think that's one of the reasons that every so often we need our foundations shook. Stan?
A follow-up on that, on climate change. And it's starting to happen that at all different levels, people are coming together to change their ways and save life on Earth. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think you're right that people are paying attention to what's happening around the planet. I think people are reminded again and again, I think you're right. I think people are remembering. That they live together in the Buddhaverse.
That point, if you remember the 100th monkey, where there's a certain critical mass and then everyone gets it and then starts doing it.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
You have any thoughts on that?
Well, let's all practice with our Sangha treasure out in the patio. May the merits of our sitting tonight and our dwelling peacefully in the Buddhaverse of School Street go on endlessly. All beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable.